Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read. The cow goes moo.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I have a special program. I found that two wonderful poets had done translations of the French poet Pierre Reverdy. Both of these volumes are going to be coming from Black Square Editions. Brooklyn Rail is the distributor. You can get these books at Small Press Distribution. And they are the prose poems of Pierre Reverdy. I had seen poems by Reverdy in various anthologies, and I had read about Reverdy, but I had not had a sustained experience of the work until I encountered these translations, and I became transfixed, fascinated, and I thought it would be wonderful to have the two poets who've done these extraordinary translations with me together. One book is the early prose poems, and it's translated by Ron Padgett. The other is a long prose poem called Haunted House, and it's translated by John Ashbery. Now, what is known about Reverdy? John?
I'm not an authority on him. He was born, I believe, in 1888, although I could be wrong about that, in Narbonne, in the south of France, near the Mediterranean. He went to the lycée, I believe, in Toulouse, and then came to Paris around the turn of the century, or a little later. He was associated with the painters. He knew Picasso and Juan Gris at the time when Picasso was newly embarked in Paris and living in Montmartre. And later, in around 1915, he published a review which reproduced of art of those artists and also published the poetry of the young surrealists who were about 10 years younger than he was. And he was a kind of, I guess, mentor to them at that time. Later on in the 20s, after surrealism was founded, I don't think he ever actually officially belonged to it. He moved away from Paris in the late 20s and moved to the town of Solesmes, which is in the...
it's near Chartres.
It's near Chartres, yeah. In fact, in the haunted house, there's an allusion to the countryside around there, which is called the Beauce, B-E-A-U-C-E, one of the few specific allusions in the work. And I'm not sure why I believe he converted to Catholicism. Solesmes is renowned for its cathedral choir. I've had recordings of it even in the 40s. But I'm not sure if that's the reason that he lived there. I know that he was married, but I don't really know anything about his life.
Well, it's said that no one knows very much about his life, and I wondered why. Was he a very solitary person later on?
Well, I think probably he was, and the mere fact that he went to live in this just village after the giddy life of Paris in the 20s would seem to indicate that he had a kind of reclusive nature.
Ron Padgett, in his translator's note, mentions that he's been at work, in a sense, on translating these poems for many years. And you mentioned that despite the rambunctiousness of your own work, the austerity and spookiness of Reverdy appealed to you. When did you first find his work?
I think I first read it when I was in college. At least that's my first recollection of it, in some anthologies. And also I recall reading some of John Ashbery's translations in Evergreen Review in the early 60s, which I thought were very, very good translations. And my teacher at the time, Kenneth Koch, also was a big fan of Reverdy's work. So all that sort of funneled me toward him. But also I was interested in the literature of that whole period in Paris of Apollinaire and Max Jacob and others. And so, Reverdy interested me, I think, because his writing was so unlike mine, and yet I liked it so much. And I was perplexed as to why I liked something that was so unlike me. And so that got me kind of hooked on him. And then when I went to live in Paris in the middle 60s, I sort of really fell for him there and sort of started dogging his footsteps, although he was dead by 5 years already. And I went and found the building he had lived in and the print shop he had corrected proofs in and, you know, that sort of detective work, just for my own pleasure. But I got more and more fascinated with him the more I read, partly because he was so stingy with information about his own life. When he first moved to Paris as a young man, he was employed as a proofreader for a large daily newspaper, which required that he work all night. And he walked to work from all the way from Montmartre down to Montparnasse. And then he had walked home at dawn. And so he was sort of became this sort of nocturnal creature, of course, and, you know, that give rise to all kinds of phantoms.
And actually, he published a magazine called North South, which is the name of the metro line that connects Montmartre with Montparnasse, which when he had the cash, he must have taken.
Oh, I'm sure he did, yeah. Yeah.
But many of these poems are walks by the railroad tracks and seeing the homeless people around the station and a kind of, I don't know, incandescent vision of the solitariness of other people, mm-hmm. that sense of of a lone one seeing the other loners, unable to interrogate them, but unable to imagine anyone who would dismiss or look down on them.
Yeah. You see the solitary person in the street at night, and you wonder who they are and how they got there. But also, he, as we said, he lived in Montmartre beginning in, I think, 1911. And at that time, that was a slightly spooky neighborhood. It wasn't entirely safe up there. There were a lot of seedy characters on the edges of it. So just walking around at the wrong time of day might get you in trouble. So maybe that contributed to his trepidation of being in the street and wondering who that person coming toward him in the street is.
At the end of this interview, we'll be hearing a section from Haunted House, but I thought I'd begin by asking Ron Padgett to read some of the prose poems. Tell about the book in which these occurred.
Well, Reverdy's first book was called Poème en Prose, just prose poems. It was published in an edition of 100 copies in 1915 at the print shop where he did proofreading, and he helped with the printing as well. These poems were six copies of this were special editions. He had two of his friends do handmade covers for six copies. The first three copies were decorated by Juan Gris, and the second three were decorated by Henri Laurent. These very beautiful, you can imagine, I mean, priceless objects. And then he dedicated these poems to various ones to his friends, Max Jacob and Picasso and Juan Gris and Henri Matisse and Georges Braque and others. And then the binding of this book took place at Reverdy's apartment it was bound by his wife, and I think it was Henri Laurens's wife, yeah, Marthe, and by George Braque's wife, Marcel Braque. So the women sat around and did some sewing after this book was printed. So that's a little of the background. And then it was distributed, just, you can imagine, 100 copies to the happy few. So anyway, the couple of excerpts that I'll read are from this first book. And I've just sort of picked three or four here. The first one is called At Dawn. In my dream, the head of a child was in the center. If the clouds gather on your roof and the rain spares you, will you keep the secret of this double miracle? But no voice calls you. If you get up barefoot, you'll get sick. Where would you go anyway, across these ravines of light? The quilts kept the silence. Legs folded under, he walks on his wings and goes out. He was an angel, and the whiter morning that was rising. This one's called The Wind and the Spirit. It is an astonishing chimera. The head, higher than this floor, takes up its position between two wires and jams and stays. Nothing moves. The unknown head speaks, and I do not understand one word. I hear no sound down on the ground. I'm always on the sidewalk across the way, and I look. I look at the words the wind brings, the words it's going to hurl further away. The head speaks, and I hear nothing. The wind disperses it all. Oh, great mocking or gloomy wind, I have wished you'd die, and I lost the hat that you have also taken away from me. I have nothing left, but my hate endures, alas, longer than you. And the last one, it's called To Each His Own. He hunted the moon, he left the night. One by one, the stars fell into a net of running water. Behind the trembling aspens, a strange fisherman watches anxiously with an open eye, the only one, hidden under his big hat, and the line quivers. Nothing is caught, but he fills his basket with pieces of gold, whose glittering is darkened inside the closed hamper. But someone else was waiting further down the bank. More modest, he was fishing in a mud puddle. The rain had left. That water, from the sky, was full of stars.
Ron Padgett reading some of his translations of Reverend D's first book of prose poems. These two translations are being published by Black Square Editions, distributed by Brooklyn Rail. You can get them at Small Press Distribution. I find this poet, Reverend D, who is new to me from these translations, to be one of the most extraordinary experiences I've had reading poetry recently. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Ron Padgett and John Ashbery about their translations of works by Pierre Reverd D. Prose poems translated by Ron Padgett and Haunted House translated by John Ashbery. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Ron Padgett and John Ashbery about their translations of works by Pierre Reverd D. Now, Haunted House in the Black Square edition comes to approximately 62 pages. It's one long prose poem, and Can you tell me about the tradition it comes from, John?
Again, I don't know very much about it. Not very much has been written about it. But it obviously has its roots in the work of the writer who called himself the Comte de Lautréamont in the 19th century, who wrote a work called Les Chants de Mal d'Aurore, The Songs of Mal d'Aurore, which was sort of the work that really inspired the Surrealists 50 years later when they began. And it's a sort of mock epic in a very sort of high-flown but at the same time satirical vein. And it's rather cruel and nightmarish and but also very lyrical and beautiful. The other tradition may well have been the prose poems of Max Jacques Kolb. I think that he and Reverdy were the two great 20th century French poets that the Surrealists were interesting and they were very good at creating buzz, but their actual poetry, I don't think, is on the same level as Jacques Kolb, who was about 10 years older than Reverdy, and who was, a kind of champion of him. I have the impression that Reverdy really couldn't get along very well by himself. And I happen to own a letter from Jacques Kolb to Henri Breton, asking for money for Reverdy, saying he's in a very bad way. If you know somebody who could raise some cash for him, that would be wonderful. I don't know whether this letter was ever sent or whether it's a copy of one that Jacques Kolb did send to Breton. I don't know whether Breton ever replied or did anything for Reverdy, but he did in the early 30s, I think, in one of the Surrealist magazines, they were always having these questionnaires, you know, and especially what 10 books would you take to a desert island? And Henri Breton chose Haunted House as one of the books that he would take with him, which I think is rather surprising because by that time, Reverdy had already left Paris, apparently converted to the Roman Catholicism and was living in the abbey town of Solesmes near Chartres. And Breton, of course, was violently anti-Catholic and anti-clerical, as were all of the Surrealists.
But I think it's completely clear, even Breton, with his taste and passion for excommunication, could not escape the power of a Reverdy poem like Haunted House.
Yeah.
It's truly extraordinary. What makes it difficult to translate? I believe this is the first translation of it ever.
Oh, yes, it is. And one thing is that there are many very long sentences with complicated clauses and grammar, sort of not unlike the problems one faces translating Proust, and it's very difficult to keep all of those in balance when you're working on them. And there were also a few very arcane puns. I had to call for help to some French friends in a few cases. I have translated the poetry before, which I love, and I find the poetry is, including what Ron just read, to be very different. It's very kind of self-effacing almost, and oblique, and occupied with very tiny degrees and differences. And Kenneth Koch, who was a great admirer of Reverdy, once said he likes to write about very tiny things like the shadow of a pin on an apple.
And also there's in the prose poems a profound sense of shame, desiring to go to places where he won't be looked at. There's a almost dread of encounter.
Yeah. I think some of that might be a bit parodic of great 19th century epic writers like Zola, for instance, I think are in the background there.
And I was thinking also of Gaspard de la Nuit.
Mm-hmm.
That sense of a nighttime vision,
yeah.
And the shame and strange craven dignity,
yeah.
Is sort of formal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't Gaspard de la Nuit the basis for Schoenberg's...
yes.
What is it again?
Pierre Lunaire.
Pierre Lunaire.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Well, yes, and that was... Therefore, that led into Expressionism from, I guess, the 1830s when it was published. Aloysius Bertrand was the name of the writer. He not really known for anything
other than that.
although I believe he is credited as being the first to write prose poems.
Yes, I think so, and that's what sent me to him. I was fascinated by the sudden evolution of the prose poem.
Yeah.
I thought, where did it come from? That and Aloysius was a name that I always liked as a child.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask John Ashbery to read a section of his translation of Haunted House. I want to, I don't know if it's right to, but there's a kind of adventure poem. It's there to some extent in Hebdomeros and the first section of Wallace Stevens' Comedian as the letters
mm-hmm.
C. The self seems to go on a exciting and threatening voyage.
Mm-hmm.
And for readers who don't know this tradition, it's so thrilling, you know, because it's aligned to Verne and adventure books, and yet crossed with aspects of, I don't know, spiritual questing, and that make it very both naked and shocking and thrilling at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
This is John Ashbery reading from his translation of Haunted House by Pierre Reverdy.
Yeah, there are a number of themes that occur almost cyclically in the Wagnerian sense in this work, one of them being a shipwreck, which is happening in this particular passage. In mid-ocean, after one of the most frightful maritime disasters of modern times, the position of the shipwrecked survivor, whom a narrow spar allows to float just underwater, is singularly critical. How will he manage to go and finish the hand of cards begun at a cafe on one of the smaller boulevards? Perhaps a shark will soon come and shear off his two legs. What will he do? Viewed from above or simply from a distance, from the bridge of a comfortable battleship, or from an even safer position on terra firma, the ocean's waves are imposing, magnificent to behold. Their contemplation lifts the immortal soul of man who compares them unfavorably to his perishable casing. But at a considerable distance from the coasts, toward one of those places where, from the height of the crow's nest, one perceives that the horizon has suddenly taken on a circular form as precise as though traced by a full-scale compass, they become terrifying, huge and terrifying. Such is the opinion of the castaway, who even goes so far as to add that he finds them vertiginous. Vertigo is swallowed up by the swipe of an albatross or a seagull's wing between the distance that separates the hollows and the crests of those liquid foothills. The castaway has had about all he can stand. His obvious lack of training begins little by little to aggravate his severe handicap in this endurance test that God has deemed equitable and salutary to send his way. But then, too, into what risky adventure did he carelessly plunge? Isn't the weather nicer in that café in the capital, ornamented with luxurious mirrors which make it seem larger? All those sounds of voices in the mirrors, all those reflections of glory in the clouds of smoke, that gale of words which drags the motions of hand and hair toward the revolving doors, those magnificent poses in which no line is wasted, those audacious phrases that go flying around the lamps and whose wings will never be censured, that sweetness of living, of wallowing in money, of demanding of others what one can't provide oneself, that ease of daydreaming and forgetting, of shouting for no reason, of singing, of inviting a crowd, of talking at night, of sleeping on emptiness, of emptying the mind, of twisting the heart, of losing at poker, of winning at fear, of laughing in the eyes and the wrinkles of one's best friends, of racing without danger along the tracks of intrepid cities, and above all, that certificate of existence which provides us with the services of our coevals at too modest a price. Why did he leave all that for this precarious solitude on the plains of the ocean? Look at him now, beginning to reflect and rest his elbows on his spar with an anxious air. How will he ever finish that card game?
Wow, that's so beautiful. I've been talking with Ron Padgett and John Ashbery about their translations of works by Pierre Reverdy, prose poems translated by Ron Padgett and Haunted House translated by John Ashbery. Both books are published by the Brooklyn Rail Black Square Editions, which are edited by the poet John Yao. The book is available through Small Press Distribution. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you.
My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The technical director is Mario Diaz, with production assistance from Alan Howard. Special thanks to recording engineer Leszek Wojcik at the Carnegie Studios in New York City. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Books. Books can be funny, too. Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time. To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm, plus copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.